Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
And my name is Quinn, pronouns they, them. This week, we're talking about season 2, episode 16, the one where Joey moves out.
This episode aired on February 15th, 1996. It was written by Michael Lembeck and directed by Betsy Bournes, who you may remember as being the writer, or writer?
Director?
This is switched. It was written by Betsy Bournes, directed by Michael Lembeck.
Beautiful.
And Betsy Bournes also wrote the episode, though, with the baby on the bus. So you might recognize her writing, if that's a thing.
And then, according to IMDb, this is the episode where Joey and Chandler's friendship is jeopardized when Joey decides to move out. Monica worries about her parents finding out about her relationship with Richard when they attend a party together. A party. And then Rachel and Phoebe get tattoos.
This is also the one where Chandler and Joey break up. Women are treated like dirt and tattoos are taboo.
Taboo.
Taboo. All right. So, Quinn, how do you feel about this episode?
I love this episode.
Yeah, I think it's a great one.
I feel like it's one of the ones that, probably because it's not centered around Ross and Rachel's very dramatic relationship, it's one that, like, doesn't get, it's, like, not as, like, popular or known or talked about, you know? Mm. But there's, like, three amazing storylines with incredibly crafted humor in all of them.
I agree.
And, like, this is a show that's just, like, on... This is an episode that's just, like, on point to me. You know?
I feel like this is, like, a very Friends show.
Yeah.
Like, episode. Like, it's very, like, iconic Friends moments. Lots of classic Chandler lines. Classic, like, Ross physical acting. Like...
Oh my god, yeah. Like, the incredible use of all of the characters for, like, their individuality and what they bring to the table.
Totally. And Phoebe has some great moments like, being Phoebe. Like,
oh yeah, so Phoebe. And then you have, like, also these great, like, jokes. There's a little, like, I'm noticing that there's, like, a little bit of, like, what's it called? Like, formula to them, but it's, like, it was just, like, fail-safe every time, where it was, like, someone says, like, something kind of funny, and then the response is something that's actually even funnier. And so it's like you think the first thing is funny, but then they build on it and it
interesting,
and they really kind of use the character's, like, counter, like, aspect. Like,
right.
You know, they really play, like, Rachel and Phoebe's counter character aspects to, like, really build their scenes. Yeah. You know, you have...
They play off of each other a lot.
Sure, you know, you know, the use of Joey and Chandler's relationship in this is...
It's my favorite. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
I think all the time, and, like, we're going to get into this, like, pretty intensely, but, like, I honestly think that, like, if they made this show in 2021, like, I feel like you, as a viewer, would be, like, hoping that they would get together. You know what I mean? Like, I feel as though they're really, like, building this, like, I'm vying for their romantic relationship more than I vie for Ross and Rachel's romantic relationship. Like, they just, like, have so many moments of, like, pure love for each other. And, like, they fight, like, really, like, and are vulnerable when they fight. And it's just, like, this moment where you're just, like, man, I was really hoping those two kids would get together. Like,
I know.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to see that. Do you have, like, three things that you want to talk about this episode or anything?
I do. Cool. I mean, I just sort of jotted three things down. And so I want to talk about stereotypes of people with tattoos.
Nice.
Like, 90s compared to now kind of thing, because that's a thing.
Totally.
And then I want to talk about, obviously, which is, like, going to be an ongoing theme, men dating younger women versus women dating older men.
Mm.
Maybe a little bit more in this episode in, like, I guess, other people's views of it.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about the use of bars of soap.
Interesting. That's...
And toothbrushes.
Yeah. That's really funny. So I also want to talk about double standards. I think that the writer is like self-aware of double standards. Right. In this episode.
Let's not go into it now.
No, I know, but that's what I'm just saying. Like, that's all I'm prefacing. I want to talk about Chandler and Joey's relationship because I think that it's important. And then I wrote, I want to talk about Ross being the worst and the best. And then I also want to talk a little bit about, like, fighting and, like, communication in relationships when you fight with someone. And I want to talk, like, about the Chandler and Joey fight and, like, I have thoughts. Anyways.
Oh, cool. Okay, but before we head in.
Yes.
I want to let everyone know that we have a new website.
Yes, we do.
We had a lot of fun transferring and re-kind of designing some aspects of it, and there's... it's actually just a platform that we're able to be a little bit more hands-on with, and it's a lot more flexible in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So just, like, keep an ear out and an eye out on the website, because we might play around with that in future.
Yeah. And also, if you haven't had a chance, so obviously Quinn and I are coming back after being away. We had put out a bit of a self-reflection episode a couple weeks ago. So this is our first kind of episodic episode. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the episode that we released on our Patreon, we definitely recommend that you listen to it. We alluded to it before the break, but we didn't actually really go into what the episode was fully about. So we talk a lot about Ross. We kind of deconstruct Ross if, like, he were a character in our group or a real person in our group of friends, how we would deal with him, kind of the good and bad moments of Ross through the 10 season of Friends. So if you have conflicting feelings around Ross, it's, like, a really fun episode. It's very casual kind of conversation. Like, Quinn and I were just, like, sitting in the living room and, like, having a cup of coffee and just chilling, talking about Ross. So it was, like, a pretty good snippet into our everyday lives of talking about characters of Friends.
And there are spoilers in it.
Yeah.
But also, just to let everyone know, this is sort of – these are sort of some Patreon episodes that we plan on – essentially releasing into the future only for our Patreon community. So if you're interested, head over to our Patreon. The link will be in the show notes, and you can support us there. And your support helps make this podcast happen. Mm-hmm. Scene one, spoon licked. Joey puts it back in the drawer.
That's your scene one. Okay, great. Yes. Wow. Going right there. Okay.
How does that make you feel, Emily?
I think this is, like, on par with the, like, no. If I were to, like, rank gross moments in Friends that we've seen so far, number one worst gross moment is Chandler picking up someone else's gum and putting it in his mouth. This is number two. This is, like, so fucked up. It's appalling.
I like, particularly enjoyed this scene even more watching it with you just now, considering that we both were recently living together.
Oh, my God.
And just...
Please tell me you never did that.
Maybe I did it.
That's... No.
No, I didn't do it, obviously. But Emily's face was just...
That would just never work in a house full of allergies.
Yeah, that really wouldn't. I would die before it would actually matter for you. Also, in the time of COVID, I feel like everyone's a little bit more of a germaphobe.
That's true. You looked and you put.
But it was just so funny because Emily's immediate reaction to that, as though she had, like, never seen this show before, was like, oh my God. Ew.
Yeah, it was real bad. I was not a fan of that.
But yes, it is. This is an amazing scene because they cover some very important topics. One is don't lick a spoon and put it back in the drawer as though it cleans it. Mm-hmm. And
I understand, like, licking your spoon to, like, take the gunk off so then you then put it in the sink and it's easier to clean. But there's a step between the licking it off and the putting it into the drawer.
Technically, it wasn't even dry when you put it back in the drawer.
Oh, it's, like, wet and saliva-y, and if there's, like, crumbs in the
thing. Unless
his
lips, like, squeegeed it as he...
Oh, my God. This conversation is making me feel so gross. I feel physically gross.
I know. I'm doing it just to gross you out. I'm sorry.
Giving me the no feeling.
Okay. So, what I think is hilarious is then, the box open, worms everywhere. Yes. Lid open. Anyway.
Yeah. Can open.
But also, like, the concept of, like, why would you use any toothbrush that lives on top of the sink to clean a toilet bowl? That does not make any sense.
That's just, like, a classic Joey move. Like, it's, like, a Joey being very, like, Don Edin, not really, like, in the clouds, not understanding that that is a stupid decision.
Right. We also learned that, they clean the toilet, which is something.
Yeah, but then... And also, cleaning a toilet with a toothbrush is, like, you're fine cleaning that toilet.
Yeah, what? Yeah, that's weird.
But, like, that feels like, I remember growing up, we had, like, toothbrushes that were in our cleaning supplies for, like, fine cleaning, like, the grout
they lived and stuff like that. Under the sink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. But that's what he says. He says, like, oh, but I use mine to clean up the toilet. But if you do that, you don't put it back into the cup with all the toothbrushes.
Yeah.
Do you have a cup for your toothbrushes?
No, I have an electric toothbrush, and it stands up on its own by the side of the sink.
I've always felt cups for toothbrushes is also kind of gross because they could, like, touch each other. I have a cup for toothbrush, but I have one toothbrush. Well, yeah. And, like, they, if they touch each other, it's kind of gross. It's equally like gross. Out. I feel like there should be, like, a commercial about two toothbrushes making out. Just, like, to remind people to, like, brush their teeth. Because otherwise you could, like, get gross stuff on you. Anyways, that's a terrible commercial. Talk to me about soap, Quinn.
So this is a great point. And I remember when I first heard this line, like, way back when I was younger, I was like, huh, interesting. They make a very good point. Yeah. But, you know, when Joey's like, well, what is the last thing that I wash with a bar of soap and the first thing that you wash?
Also.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, what's the answer to that question for you?
Okay, well, for me, mm-hmm. like, I don't use the bar of soap to wash your body directly. And apparently you're, like, also not supposed to. It's, like, very harsh for your skin. Also, yeah,
you put it on a loofah or, like, a mitt or whatever it is.
Yeah, that is, like, separate from the bar of soap. But from what I understand, there are, like, a large part of, like, you know,
sect
of people who just, like, put the bar of soap onto them.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm more of, like, a lather up my hands, lather up an extra entity, a separate entity, use that on my body type of person. But
I use liquid body wash.
Right, so you've solved the problem entirely.
Because I think bars of soap are disgusting.
I also don't use bars of soap. But I do think this is something that's, like, very particular to, like, a lot of, like, male culture. Mm. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, bars of soap being sold to men. I feel like it's actually only in the last, like, 10 years, and this is before 10 years, that, like, male grooming products have, like, expanded into things like... You know, I think, like, Axe gel body wash was, like, you know, one of the first, you know, like, before that it was, like, men, I put little, like, air quotes, men's grooming products were all, like, oh, bar of soap.
Yeah.
That is all.
Okay, but let's say you go to a, like, hotel, and the hotel, and obviously, like, subtract your allergies from this, and
they have little mini bars of soap.
Yeah, they have little mini bars of soap, okay? But let's say you go to a hotel, and you only have this mini bar of soap, where's the last place you wash and the first place you wash?
You really want me to just...
Yeah, because I don't actually agree with this.
What's, like, the last thing that you wash? I probably wash my feet last, to be honest.
Do you, like, get under each foot and, like, really scrub?
I get between my toes.
That's really cute. I don't know if I do that.
This is really personal.
Maybe this is too close.
Can I turn this around? What is the last thing you washed, Emily?
That's the thing, is that, like, I feel as though, first of all, I would never use a bar of soap to wash my face. Because that's what they're implying. They're implying that, like, the last place you wash is your undercarriage. That's the word I'm using for today. And the first place you wash is your face. But I definitely don't think that my, if anything, my face is the last place I wash.
Why do you wash your face last?
I don't know. But my armpits are for sure the first place I wash.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Because, like, they're usually the stinkiest. You gotta not forget them.
You make a good point. That's so funny.
Okay, moving on. Next scene. We're in Monica and Rachel's apartment. the boys walk in and they're going to have brunch at one of Joey's friends, like fancy actor's place. And then Phoebe and Rachel are talking about how they're going to get tattoos. And then meanwhile, in that same kind of scene, Monica is filling out a birthday card because Monica, Richard, and Ross are about to go to Jack Geller's birthday party.
Yeah.
That was a good summary of the scene.
Yeah, that is a great summary of the scene.
Great.
21, Monica mentions that they're 21 years apart.
Yeah.
And that is a lot of years. Mm-hmm. That is two decades and a year.
That is math.
One person who can drink in the U.S. apart.
Yeah, that's what they say in the first episode they start dating.
Yeah.
You're a whole person who can drink older than me.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then you have Ross Geller come in.
Yeah.
And he's like, why would you want to scar your body for life?
Yeah, I know. He's such like a, he's got such a stick up his ass in this episode. Like, he's just like...
this episode?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, but like, do you remember when tattoos were like a huge deal?
Oh my god, yeah, totally. Yeah. This is in that time.
But like, people growing up now, like people who are like 18 or whatever now, like, I don't know if there's that same, like, obviously as a parent, I think like the parent to child thing, there's still like a little bit of that, like, don't get a tattoo, like it's gonna be on your body for life, like blah blah blah. But it's more just like, to try and convince your kid not to get a tattoo while they're still, like, very mm-hmm. young, you know? But, like, whatever. But, like, I think that, and I also think it's, like, a generational thing. But, like, imagine telling your friend now, like, not to get a tattoo because it could scar your body for life. Like, I actually don't think I have a single friend that doesn't have a tattoo. Like...
Yeah. I feel self-conscious about how little tattoos I have.
Yeah. Same. Like, sometimes I'm, like, not all, like, I have 5 tattoos and... only a few of them are visible. Like, I need more visible tattoos. Like, the opposite of what people say, you know?
You have an epic tattoo on your leg.
Oh. But it's only ever seen, like, 3 months of the year when I'm living in Canada because stupid because winter.
Hashtag winter. Yeah. The ideas around tattoos have changed pretty drastically.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there's still a lot, though, of that mentality. Also, depending on which groups you, like, meander through, you mm-hmm. know, like...
Yeah.
Like, we also are very, like, a very queer-centric, like, communities that we're more in touch with, which, you know, is...
And, like, bar... I was entrenched yeah. in bar culture, which and, has a lot of tattoos.
Yeah. So that's, like, you know, very... common. I do think, though, in, like, mainstream, it's becoming more and more common to have tattoos and for it to be more okay. But there's still a lot of, I think it's still, like, a bit of a back and forth, but nothing like it was mm-hmm. in 1995 when this was released.
96. 96, but 96.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, totally. And also just Ross is just so boring. Like, he's just like, he's just so like, why would you ever do that? Like, it's just like classic Ross. Just like Phoebe tells you that she's excited about this thing that she's doing and Ross just like shits on it. And I know the humor is supposed to be that like, you know, Rachel's getting a tattoo and like, it's supposed to be this kind of like secret thing, blah, blah, blah. But like, it's just like he shits on it in like such a mean way in front of like everyone. And yeah. he's like really just telling like Phoebe, like, you're making a terrible decision.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, you're such a dick. Like,
no, totally. Yeah.
Anyways. Okay. Do you want to go on to Jack and Judy's house?
So, yeah. So then there's, okay. So then we move over. We're in front of Jack and Judy's house about mm-hmm. to go in for Mr. Geller's birthday. And there is this skerfuffle before they knock on the door and go in,
mm-hmm.
which is funny because I also feel like they would technically just walk into the house. You know, yeah. it's a party that's happening. It's their parents' place. Why would you knock? You know, but
no, I don't think they were knocking. Did they knock?
Yeah. I think they rang.
Oh, I thought the point was that they were trying to figure out how they were going to walk into the house. I don't think they were knocking.
Oh, okay. Whatever. Anyway. But then,
yeah, just, you wouldn't knock on the door of like the house you grew up in. Like, that's just weird.
But then I love the line Ross is, he's so such a great side character and like little commentary troll for this entire scenario and this whole storyline, because him being like, you can walk in there straddling him and they still won't believe it. It's just like such a great line. Because yeah, it's true. Like, why, like, how would you ever believe that that was a thing?
Yeah.
Especially also, like, I think also considering Richard's character as well. It's like, not that he's the, he's clearly not like a
philanderer.
Yeah. Is that the word?
I don't know. You believed me, so I think it's the word.
I don't think so.
Philanderer, a man who readily or frequently enters into casual sexual relationships with women.
Oh.
That is the word.
There you go. yeah, he's not a philanderer. And we'll find out more about that, like, in future episodes, right?
Yeah.
But we'll delve into his sexual history.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, like, no matter what, yeah, I think it's pretty funny.
Great. Yeah, I agree. I also, like, I think that I realized just now in this moment that I love Ross in every episode in which the story is not about him.
Yeah.
I find that, like, he plays such a good, he's such a good side character. Like, he should be more like how Phoebe is portrayed in the the show. Like, there for comedic relief, there for funny facial expressions. But, like, he's actually, like, him as a person, it kind of sucks, but he's, like, really great for, like, facial expressions and everything, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny, I was thinking exactly that through this episode, that he makes a very great supporting character.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the issues around Ross are kind of when you start exploring him as, like, a hero character.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah, and yeah. Yeah.
Because if you start to look at Ross as just being, like, a secondary character there for humor, like, a lot of the shitty things that he does doesn't feel as, like, shitty. Because it's not like it's being put on a pedestal or anything like that. It's more just, oh, he's the side character being stupid, you know?
Right.
As opposed to, like, oh, he's the hero and the love interest of, like, the main love interest of the whole show, you know? Anyways, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the double standards that start to come through here. So, this is like, so
like immediately.
Monica's mom is like, you know, I hear Richard's got some 20-year-old Twinkie in the city, and then Richard's shopping in the junior section, and then just like lots of shitty comments about women by the women.
And I kind of want to deconstruct this a little bit,
because
I want to talk about like, there's essentially the verses, right? Where it's like the men dating younger women versus women dating older men, and how those are actually like two different things, and but how the way that people look at it, usually the woman just always ends up being shit on.
Yeah.
You know, when that's so far from the point in the situation. You know, like, most of, like, I think that what these women are saying, like, the emotional drive of what they're pointing out, and even if, like, what they're saying is true, you know, it's like, oh, she's probably not even that attractive, you know, like, going from the perspective of, like, oh, he just wants someone who is, like, younger than us. It's like, these women are very much faced with a reality that, like, in our society, them and their bodies and their looks and everything is basically losing worth with every year that that goes by. Totally. Right.
It's like this scene is like a direct, or these comments, which are terrible, are like a direct result of ageism and sexism combined. Right. Like,
And it's interesting because it's like, it's one thing, like, these comments, if or when said as an observation of a, like, a patriarchal issue and a misogynistic issue is one thing, but these comments instead being used to shit on the woman at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's where it's that's almost say exactly the same thing and not end up shitting on the woman, right?
Yeah. It could have been used as a way to shit on Richard.
Yeah, exactly.
But the woman, of course, has to take the brunt of this.
Yeah, and as Richard says, that he's the hero in the situation, you know? And it's so frustrating because it's like, it's true. Older men will date younger women for all of these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But it has nothing to do with the woman. It has a problem. Like, it's a problem with the man.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. And yeah. And I just think that, anyways, we'll go into that a little bit more as these conversations continue to progress throughout the episode. But like, I just think that the ways in which this writer, like the writer wrote this episode, yeah. I do think that the writer was like trying to very subtly point out, or maybe obviously point out like the double standards.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like I think that I understand what the writer's trying to do, but at the same time, I think that they could have done it in a way that didn't leave the women shitting on the other women. I think they could have pointed out these double standards without the women shitting on the women.
Right. I don't know. I find, yeah, no, I totally see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been done in a different way, but I also think that it was very, like, I do think there was a certain consciousness of what this writer was doing, and the point was to, like, play it out. Because, like, right now what they're doing is that, like, normally in a lot of storylines, you have this dynamic where older man dating the younger woman, but the younger woman is not the hero of the story, right?
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like you've kind of thrown a veil over this woman, and you can say whatever the fuck you want about her, and it doesn't really matter. But this is an interesting situation because they're making it so like, oh, we're going to play out that part where we're going to shit on the woman, and we're going to throw her down.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're actually going to make it so that woman is not only the hero of her story, but then also a very central person to the people who are shitting on this woman.
Right.
You know, which is something that like doesn't very often get played out.
That's true.
Especially at this time, I feel, on TV. And so they're really kind of making you look at what those women are saying from a different perspective, you know, like it's like you're hearing the things that are typically said, but then it's being put onto someone that you know, and it makes you feel uncomfortable. And I think that there is something interesting about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's very interesting. I didn't really think of it that way, but yeah, totally. I like that.
Yeah. And then you flip over to Jack.
Yeah.
And what he's saying is a million fucking times worse.
Mm-hmm. Jack is like, ever since you pointed it out in that episode a little while ago, where you were talking about like how like actually Jack is kind of like, he's seen as like this nice dad figure, but actually he's like really gross. Mm-hmm. Like ever since you pointed that out, I've really noticed it. And I'm just like, holy shit, Jack is like actually a disgusting dad.
Yeah.
Like, some of the, sure, he's funny and, like, there's the final scene of this episode is actually completely cut out of the Crave version, but he comes back in the last scene and kind of talks to Monica, and he's really just, like, ridiculous and funny in a lot of ways. But I think that, like, in this scene, what he is about to say and doesn't say is actually fucking disgusting. And he almost says it.
He
basically said it.
No, what he implies, like he I feel like he basically rightfully says it as much as he's willing to say it, you know, like, but yeah, so essentially in the next scene with him, they flip over to him and you're hearing the conversation of the men around Richard being like, oh, so you're dating a Twinkie in the city, you know, like a younger woman, you know, and basically just being super vulgar about and like objectifying this woman that they have no idea who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And not like, let's put a pin in that, them objectifying it, but like they are encouraging him to basically only see this woman as nothing but like a win or object, something that can like make him feel better about himself in like a very superficial way that really degrades her, you know?
Totally.
And
yeah, and what I find interesting in this scene is that like I think that like Richard isn't playing into it. Like Richard isn't like, yeah, like she's really great, blah blah blah. And part of me is like trying to figure out if like this is because Richard is a decent dude and like therefore it's fine. Or if Richard is only not saying that because Ross is there and, like, Jack will eventually find out.
Yeah.
Or is, like, so, like,
would Richard be playing into this, like, mm-hmm. yeah, she's young, she's hot, like...
Yeah, you know, like, they say that, like, your friends are representative of, like, who you are, yeah. you know, like, and...
I don't, like, love that, but... Yeah, yeah.
But, like, it's just interesting, because you're right, you know, mm-hmm. they're... That's the thing, is that, like, I think that they're trying to imply that sort of perspective of, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't take, you know, he isn't like that. But, like, the locker talk.
Yeah, locker room. Yeah, I was thinking
the same thing. Is, like, such a normalized part of culture.
Yeah.
Especially in their generation.
Totally.
And so it's sort of like, yeah, it's like how... You know, like, talking about women in such a way that's so degrading is so common.
Yeah.
And
I like to believe that Richard would not.
I know, we don't want to, because
he's dreamy. I think that, like, just based on the other things and aspects of Richard's character that we've seen, like, he does feel like he's very emotionally mature in a way that no other man on this show really ever demonstrates. And so I have a feeling, so, like,
true. Oh my God.
Yeah. And so I do feel like that's not a thing that he would do, but
yeah,
whatever. There's no way of knowing. But anyways,
but let's also open this box further, right? Because, like, I think that sometimes people will say, like, oh, well, you know what, you know, Monica's dad and his friend are saying, who are, like, standing around Richard. It's like, sometimes it's just talk and it's harmless. And I just want to, like, I don't want to entertain that for too much. I just want to point out that it's not, it's not harmless.
It's like, yeah. And he's literally, like, Jack is literally comparing his car to a woman. Like, it's like,
why don't we trade sometime, Emily, and you can take my car and I can,
like,
fuck your
girlfriend,
your new Twinkie in the city.
Because, like, she would be as, like, willing as a car. Like, literally, like, the idea is, like, they're, it's not even just, like, we vaguely talk about objectifying. Like, in this moment, that is the literal objectification, like, literally implying that the woman is the same as a car. Like, if that's not, like, the most literal form of objectification you could possibly find, like, that is just straight up it. Like, this woman, like, I could ride this woman in the same way I could ride in a car.
Yeah.
Like
that shouldn't, like, harmless talk or not, like, that literally just shouldn't be something that runs through your mind.
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't be a concept at all. Yeah. Like,
then the thing that, like Ross stops his dad from saying the sentence because it's going to imply that he's sleeping with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But men should stop men from speaking those sentences, like, even if it's not someone's daughter. I can't be sexist. I have a daughter.
That's someone's daughter you're talking about.
Yeah, like, maybe care about women regardless of who's they're related to. Like,
they don't have to have a man in their life for you to consider them important.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? Anyways, so, yeah, it's just terrible on all fronts. But we did miss a scene, actually, because the Jack scene and the Judy scene are actually separated by a scene of Chandler and Joey at brunch.
Right.
So we'll just, there's nothing really interesting that happens. Clearly, it's just, like, an expensive, nice New York apartment.
Soap opera party.
Yeah.
In my notes.
I wrote, great apartment, and then stop talking.
Is it a great apartment?
It's like a huge apartment in New York City.
I mean, I guess we only see essentially the equivalent of Chandler and Joey's current apartment.
Right.
You know, it's like, we see the living room, and that is all. True. Like, yeah. And so it's sort of like, is it a great apartment? I don't know. But also, anyway.
I don't know. I think he talks about the view, and you can kind of see the view. Mm-hmm. Like, if you think about Chandler and Joey's apartment, they don't really have, like, any windows.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, they have some, which, like, it doesn't actually really make sense the way that their windows are placed, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's
also, I couldn't help but notice, but, like, that apartment on the big window in the back, they have those, like, classic, like, condo blinds.
Yeah.
And I just have, like, such a hard time with those. I think I saw them and also the gray-brown walls. Yeah. And I was just like, is this a great apartment?
Yeah, the decor isn't great. You have to look at the structure.
But yeah, no, and then I think like Chandler is just like classic Chandler, like over talking, being this like, you know, but then we see kind of Joey in his element in a lot of ways. Like he's like in an actor setting, like, anyways.
Again, really setting it up like, you know, how it is when you are someone's partner and you go to like one of their work events and it's sort of like you don't actually know really anyone there and like you only know of everyone through this person and like they're really in their element and they can forget that you're, you know, kind of like feeling awkward and really out of place and anyway.
I love their relationship. Okay, so then we hop into the tattoo parlor, and Phoebe is deciding that she wants a lily for her mom, Lily, and so she's
Well, she already decided that.
Right, right. She's trying to pick which tattoo she wants or which lily she wants.
I want to point out, I love when she's there, and she's like, Rachel, can you help me figure out which one I want? Like, this one or this one? I like this one.
I know, it's so good.
It's just like sometimes you just need someone's emotional support for you to figure it out yourself.
It's like when you like flip a coin to decide something and then the coin flips and you're like, ah, now I know what I really want. Yeah. It's not the thing that I just landed on.
I know.
It's like you need to flip a coin just to like validate your own needs or wants.
I know.
Yeah, and then obviously we see Rachel being pretty like concerned about Ross, not really sure if she wants to get it now.
She's having cold feet.
Which, like, in a lot of ways, that's, like, understandable. Like, I know that Phoebe's like, oh, who, like, Ross's boss, blah, blah, blah. But, like, it would be pretty intense if you, like, decide, make this decision to do something, and then, like, right before you're about to do it, your partner, like, shits on it without realizing that it's something you're about to do. And, like, obviously that would put,
Ross just shouldn't have been so shitty on things.
Totally. And so, like, I understand where Rachel's coming from. Totally. Like, I think that that could be, like, a really...
Yeah, to have that moment of concern. But I do think that, like, Phoebe's, like, pump-up speech, as hilarious as it was, is, like, made sense. You know, like, have a friend there to remind you, like, okay, you might feel, like, weird about your partner not liking this, but, like, this is you. Like, this is your body. Like, this is for you. It's not for your partner, you know? I think that's
it's such great. An interesting, like, I feel like sexism shows up in so many different ways in this episode. Like, we see, like, obviously sexism through the double standards that, like, you know, but then we also see, like, sexism of, like, well, we see sexism, like, Twinkie versus Hero double standards, and then we see, like, sexism, Jack just shitting on women and objectifying women, but then we see, like, women being disgusting about women, like, a different form of sexism, and then we see, like, Rachel not wanting to do something because the, like, her boyfriend doesn't want her to
do
it.
And they directly talk about like feminism and then you know, like how Phoebe is like, what is this, 1922? It's like, I don't know, it's just, you know, really long time ago when women
when men used to tell women what to do.
And then there was suffrage and that seems like a bad thing, but it was really good.
It's so funny. I've literally always felt that way about the term suffrage. I'm like, it literally sounds like suffering. Like, why?
Is there a root to that word that I don't get, that I'm missing? Because
I don't know. Maybe we can think about it.
Really
it after.
Wasn't the best marketing technique out there.
Well, maybe men coined it suffrage because it was suffering to them. Anyways.
I thought you were looking up the word. Never mind.
I was kind of looking up the word, but the right to vote in political elections is all it means.
Right.
But we just, I guess, only see it as women's suffrage, right? Like, we just, like...
And while we're here, I just want to point out that... I forget the date that she says that suffrage happened, but...
She doesn't actually say a date.
That, that...
Obviously, white women got the right to vote before.
Yeah, and it took a very long time for people, women who were not white, to get the ability to vote. So, just whenever... If you're here about, like, the date of suffrage and women being able to vote... Just keep in mind that that was white women and is not inclusive of everyone. And racism is a systemic long-term issue that is not erased yet. So, yeah.
All right.
Moving forward.
So this speech by by Phoebe is really interesting. Like, or not interesting, but the way she's like, is your boyfriend the boss of you? And I just think we see, like, I've been clearly listening to this podcast that I've been listening to called Why Are Dads? But, like, I feel as though there's, like, a lot of, like, I'm not going to say this, actually. I'm going to cut this out. But I do feel as though, like, Phoebe's got, like, a lot of top energy here. Like, she's got a lot of, like...
Who's the box of you. You are?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm just, like, super into this moment of, like, Rachel's being like, I'll do anything for you right now. Like, this, like, compliance to Phoebe all of a sudden.
Oh, no. Now I'm, like, trying to picture, could Rachel and Phoebe be in a relationship? Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
I could see it. Yeah, definitely. I'm seeing it more and more. Yeah.
The longer, but Phoebe would 100% be, like, the top.
I mean, like, relationships do often work when there's, like, someone who's a little bit more, like, intense and definitive and someone who's, like, a little bit more laid back.
Wishy-washy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually worse if two people are very stubborn. Something I've learned. Anyways.
I don't know how we have a relationship.
So then, yeah, Phoebe's like, you are the boss of you. And then in the DVD version, what's cut out is that Phoebe kind of turns to someone who's sitting in the waiting room and she goes, wow, I don't even have my tattoo yet and I'm already tougher. Yeah, I love it. It's so good.
Funny. Yeah.
Okay, so we're back in Jack and Judy's house, and Monica is in the bathroom and Richard joins her in the bathroom, which, okay, just logistics style. How did that happen? This is pre-cell phones. You can't just text someone and be like, meet me in the bathroom.
Well, okay. I'm going to go through a few plans that I had thought about when I watched the scene, because I also thought of the same thing. I was like, there's a few different scenarios. One is that they could have made it so that they had, like, a code, whatever, that they would meet in the bathroom. So
like they that was, like, a
pre-plan, you know, okay. If they needed to check in. But then also, I feel like there could have been a scenario where
one of them went to the bathroom and saw the other one and saw them.
No, that's weird.
Okay.
But, like, you know, like a simple sort of, like, head nod over,
right.
You know, through the crowd.
Yeah, I can see that. Makes sense. Yeah. I guess we did find ways to communicate pre-cell phones.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What a concept. Yeah, okay, so then obviously we get this kind of, like, classic line that kind of summarizes the episode or summarizes this storyline. You know, I'm a Twinkie. Really? I'm a hero. Which, like, again, really just reinforces the fact that, like, men can sleep with younger women and it makes them, like, more macho, more, like, you know, seen as men. Mm-hmm. And then women, if, like, they're dating older men, then clearly something's wrong with the women.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like women's fault no matter how you slice it.
I know.
Yeah, which, like, obviously we get this really, like, cute scene between the two of them where, like, she's just, like, I don't know. I find it really cute where she's just, like, he's, like, why don't we just tell them? And she's just, like, why don't we tell your parents first?
I know. My parents are dead.
You're so lucky. And then he's, like, and she just, like, apologizes and is just kind of, like, clearly, like, overwhelmed, and she's just like, oh, I'm just really sorry, and then he just, like, kisses her and, like, kind of takes care of her in that moment. I think it's, like, a really cute,
mm-hmm.
like, I feel like they really both have a lot of chemistry on screen, like, the two actors together, like,
mm-hmm.
yes, there's a 21-year age difference, and I think in real life there's, like, quite a bit of an age difference, like, 19 or 20 years or something,
yeah,
but, like, I still think that they have, like, a really good chemistry on scene, like, you wouldn't necessarily feel as though there was an age difference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, then obviously they go out, and then we have this funny moment of Richard indicating to Monica.
Good for you.
I see you're going to the bathroom.
Judy. Which, I'm proud of him for doing that. That's such, like, an awkward thing to do. But then Monica gets to listen in on
the live show
of her parents,
which is interesting because they do a callback to a previous episode,
yeah,
which is not something that they do very often. Like, they reference more, like, plot points from previous episodes, but, like, there's often things like, you know, Ross's allergies are not continuous. Like, there's tons of like, the birthdays of all the characters are never the same. Like, literally, they say different birthdays, like, throughout the 10 seasons. Like, so there's a lot of things that are not, like, there's no callback to previously, like, said or seen information. And, like, this is interesting. Like, literally the episode before, or two episodes before,
they do a
callback to it, which is kind of cool.
Remember when I watched that video? And it's also interesting because, like, again, something that's not very often put in shows is like people who are their age, like both a woman and a man who are of that same age, not an older man dating a younger woman.
Yeah.
Like being sexual with each other.
Yeah.
Let alone also like a couple in a long-term relationship together.
Yeah.
You know, and I even remember like being younger and seeing that and being like, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
You know?
But is it not seen as like gross? Are they not like trying to make a joke that it's gross? Or are they just making a joke that it's gross for Monica because it's her parents?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
I feel like it's more like they might be sort of sliding in the in-between there where it's like they can show it, but then we're also viewing it through Monica.
Yeah.
And so it's more like I guess I always thought of it more of like it's gross that Monica had to witness it.
Yeah, yeah, you know? For sure.
And but like
I'm just thinking of when she walks out of the bathroom. Like it's also again a perfectly cut scene. Then like the next scene,
God,
where like first Jack walks out and he's just like so peppy, and then Monica's mom Judy walks out and she's just like fixing her shirt and she's like, "Who wants cake?" Like,
I know.
And then Monica walks out and she just like looks so traumatized. Like she just like walks out like these tiny little steps. Her whole body is not moving. Her face is like just like it's just like.
And Ross like immediately knowing that something is wrong.
Yeah, like, he was like in the middle of a conversation with someone and like goes to talk to her and is just like, yeah. Again, Ross just being a side character in a great way.
But, yeah, that is a very, very well set entrance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we actually kind of jumped ahead because we're back in Chandler and Joey's apartment. And they start to have a fight because.
Yes.
I saw the way you were checking out his moldings.
Yeah. And so they're doing the thing again where they're paralleling their roommate relationship to being a more committed romantic relationship. Yeah. And it's. Makes for a very cute argument for us. Very sad for them.
Yeah. I like this apartment. I like living here. Wouldn't kill you to say it every once in a while.
Classic.
And then he says, I don't need, like, he says, like, I'm at a point. I'm 28 years old. I've never lived alone, and I don't need a roommate anymore. And, like, this is a real feeling. Like, I think, like, as someone who is, I'm 28, right?
Yes. 20 years old.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, doing the math. Yes. Born in 1993. It's 2022. Right. Yes. I am 28 years old. Like, this is a real feeling. Like, just being like, okay, like, I need space. I need to be in my own space. I need to make my own decisions around my space, blah, blah, blah. But he says, like, I don't need a roommate anymore. In New York City, as an actor who is not famous, yes. Yes, you do need a roommate.
Well, I mean, he is in a soap now, and the idea is he's making a lot more money. He feels like he has,
yeah, but like
New
Chandler
York.
Working like a desk job. I don't know. I feel like you just those are huge ass apartments. Like those apartments would be like $2,000 now, easy.
Mm-hmm. Oh my,
more.
Yeah,
it would be $2,000 in like Toronto.
Yeah, New York is pretty fucking, I don't know. If anyone is listening.
Who's from New York.
From New York. Let us know what you think that, like, Chandler and Joey's apartment would go for.
Yeah.
And Monica and Rachel's as well.
Monica and Rachel's is, like, significantly larger, but Chandler and Joey's. Yeah, I'd be curious to know.
Yeah. Because. Yeah, because they're, like, very central as well. Mm-hmm. They're not even, like, you know, way out. And. I remember, like,
well, they're
years
right
ago.
Across the street from Central Park, because they're right above
exactly.
Central Park.
Oh, my God. Their apartments would be, like, $4,000 at least.
Yeah.
Be, like, $2,000 per room.
So, and, like, clearly people don't make that much money working.
I don't know what I'm talking about, but, like, that's what I can assume.
It's a lot of money.
Like, I can't even imagine. Yeah, anyway, whatever.
Anyways, we talk about that all the time. Absurd rent prices. We're not Bert and Ernie.
And in the DVD version, the extended, it's like, I know we're not gay puppets or whatever.
I'm aware we're not gay puppets. Which, do you remember when that was, like, a huge thing in the 90s? That, like, people got, like, suddenly very upset that Bert and Ernie lived together?
I know. It was just, like, out of nowhere. They were like, they could be gay!
And, like, it was, like,
you know, of course, like, the queer community was like, wow, really hope they are gay. Like, that would be so nice to have some representation. And, like, then the, like, obviously, like, right-wing community was just so upset by the possibility that they could be gay. As if two men living together automatically means they're gay. Like, it literally, like...
To be fair, that they did share a bed.
Right.
Very often. But it's just so... strange, because it's just like
puppets who are
fucking... I know there are puppets, and there's like other non, like, less human shaped puppets that would like share a bed, and it was just sort of like, it didn't matter.
Yeah,
it's just, anyway, it's just like, who cares?
It makes zero sense. But then, yeah, and then, okay, so I want to talk about this because I think that, like, maybe we'll get into it after when we kind of see the repercussion of the fight. But they definitely, like, get into this big fight where, like, a lot of things are said. They're really upset. Like, the, you know, we didn't agree to live together forever. And then he says, like, well, maybe you should just take the apartment, blah, blah, blah. And, like, they're just, like, kind of upset with each other and clearly, like, really just speaking out of anger in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, like, I just think it's interesting to look at the ways in which we communicate in, like, fights. Because I think that... so often when people are fighting, like, there's this feeling of, like, people are saying what they really mean when they fight, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, I think that there's two sides of that. Sometimes when people fight, they do say what they really mean because maybe they didn't feel like they had the space to say it before, and they can only say it when they're, like, in this position, when they're yelling at each other and they've gotten to the end of their rope, whatever. But I also think that there's, like, a very real side of things in which, like, sometimes when people are fighting, they say things they don't mean, specifically... to, like, hurt or to, like, you know, mm-hmm. out of, like, you know, unregulated emotions. Like, they're just, like, kind of all over the place and just saying anything that comes to mind without actually having fully thought things through. So there is something to be said about, like, how fighting and yelling at each other can make people more honest, but also can make people, like, just not say anything that makes any sense. So when the fight is over and, like, they apologize to each other... and I think this happens, again, a lot when people apologize to each other for a fight. I don't think it's necessarily, like, people don't necessarily clarify all the time what it is that they're apologizing for from the fight. Like, is it, are you apologizing for, like, the harsh things you said? Are you apologizing for what you said? Or are you, like, apologizing for the anger, how you said it, you know? And, like...
yeah, there's, like, literally, like, nothing that ends... yeah. Unless you're more specific, nothing gets resolved. And then that's sort of how, like... build up can happen in a relationship over time of, like...
yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, in this moment, they kind of apologize to each other. They don't really say anything.
Are you now skipping to the next scene? No, is it in that scene?
Yeah. It's in the next scene. So, okay. I guess we won't skip to it. That's fine.
No, go ahead. No.
Okay, well, we'll just go back to then after before. We'll go back to after before, I literally just said. but I think, like, it's interesting to see that, like, clearly they have like come out of this fight with like different understandings of what the person was trying to communicate and like apologizing and thinking that the person is apologizing for like Chandler obviously thinks he's apologizing for like saying that he would move out in a fit of anger.
Right.
But really what he's apologizing, Joey's apologizing for like the way he told him that he wanted to move out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that that's like a very real scenario. I think that's like very often happens that people apologize for saying things, but actually meant them or like meant them, but didn't mean to say it in such a mean way or a harsh way or whatever, you know?
I also really like that line in this scene where they kind of make up and then they realize the miscommunication. Where like Joey is like, oh, definitely taking the apartment. And Chandler is kind of like, I thought that we were just having a fight, you know, and we just said those things because we were having a fight. And what I love is Joey saying it was a fight based on serious stuff.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, again, this is, again, this episode doing a really good job of pulling out the strengths of each character. Like Joey is very consistently a character that has of all of his, you know, like, a lot of the time he's made fun of for not knowing things, but in actuality he's, like, the character that probably understands, like, the relationship dynamics of people and friendships. And mm-hmm. I feel like him pointing that out as though, like, oh, is like, this is an obvious thing to me about, like, yeah. how, yes, we can have arguments, but it can also be about real things, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was very, again, yeah. just like a subtle thing of this writer just kind of getting it, like getting the characters, getting how to write the show, yeah. getting, yeah. I wish there was more written by this writer. Yeah.
And then, which, you know, if you think about it, the other episode she wrote was the one with the baby on the bus,
mm-hmm.
which is also, they're kind of portrayed as a couple.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe if this writer kept being on the show, they would have ended up together. and then we get one of the best lines. Like, to me, it's one of the most iconic lines from Friends, which is, like, Joey says, oh, you know, I don't mean to leave you high and dry. Yeah.
I've never been lower or wetter.
Never been lower or wetter. I think it's just such a great line. And I use that one, too.
That's okay,
one.
But let's talk about that for a second, because Joey literally moves out, like, the next day. Like,
I know.
So I couldn't find a better... high and dry. Yeah, that is the definition of high and dry. Like, you are not lower and wetter, Chandler. Like, that's...
Yeah.
You don't just, like, move out on your friend overnight. Like, that's actually a really jerk move.
Yeah, like, unless you're like, I'm gonna pay for rent for this next, like, few months until you find a person. Like, yeah. But, like, what the hell? It's super rude.
I mean, Chandler does say in it that's, like, he doesn't need a roommate. Like, he has a roommate because he wants a roommate, right. You know? Like, they do insinuate in the whole length of the show that Chandler is, like, the most financially
stable
individual, and he just chooses his lifestyle because he likes his friends.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's also, like, even if you're financially stable and can live alone, it's mm-hmm. still, like, a massive rearrangement of your finances.
Yeah, no, for
to,
sure.
To, like, you know, not have half your rent being paid out. Like,
yeah.
There's definitely some planning involved in that, no matter how well off you are, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, okay.
Let's go back in time.
Yeah, let's go back to, we're back in Jack and Judy's house, so we've already talked about, like, how they all walk out of the bathroom.
Oh my God.
Blah, blah. And then, obviously, oh, we didn't talk about this, but in the scene with the bathroom, we hear that Jack, like, literally says that, you know, that Johnny Shapiro said that Richard is the happiest he's ever seen him, and, like,
is probably falling in love with this person he's seen.
Which I think it's really interesting to see the way that Jack talks about this relationship around all the boys mm-hmm. versus talking to his wife about this relationship.
Oh, like, that's a good point. Yeah.
He's, like, putting on this, like, air of, like, blah, 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 women are objects. But then when he talks to his wife about it, it's, like, more talking about the love aspects of it. And mm-hmm. it's just, like, it's just kind of gross. To, like, see how he's just, like, almost putting on a different he's a different person around mm-hmm. the men. And I feel like growing up, I just, like, believed, and we talk about this a little bit in, like, our reflection episode, mm-hmm. but, like, I believed so much that, like, this was what men did. Like, men were two completely different people in front of women versus around other men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, men told me or taught me, or men on TV taught me that, like, that was normal and therefore I shouldn't trust other men. But then when women tell men that they can't trust them, it's like men get so defensive. But meanwhile, like, all of mm-hmm. our media portrayal is, like, men telling women that they shouldn't trust men.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this weird thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very fucked up. Like, it's, like, mm-hmm. literally just, like, so fucked up.
Yeah. I've had, like, this constant fear of being in a relationship with, like, a man who is, like, a completely different person.
Yeah, like a Jekyll and Hyde effect, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just sort of, like, we've normalized, like, society has normalized men to be so one way with men and one way with women mm-hmm. that, like, there's sort of how you can't actually know.
Yeah.
You know,
it's really scary. And it's scary because I think that, like, I've been lucky enough to be around men who
are not like that a lot of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, knowing that there's so many women who are constantly exposed to men like this all the time,
mm-hmm.
like, it's just really gross. Mm-hmm. Anyways. All right. So, yeah. So then Monica goes into the kitchen. She sees Richard and she's like, oh, like, I heard some really nice things that you said about me, blah, blah, blah. And it's like this cute moment. And then Judy walks in and she's like, hey, Richard, why doesn't your son give Monica a call? Which, spoiler alert, foreshadowing. But then.
Yep.
Okay, let's
Emily.
I know, I did a spoiler. And then Monica decides that this is the moment that she's going to say, you know, I'm already seeing someone. And then this is like this is Ross a la Max. Do you want to talk a little bit about like the scene and Ross?
Oh my God, yeah. So you have, yeah, so how, okay, so we have Monica start telling, basically being like, oh, I already seen someone. And it's slowly starting to escalate. First of all, before we start going down the road of like what actually and how it fully plays out, my immediate response every time is like, wait, like a horrible timing. Like this is actually not the time to do it. Like no matter what, no matter anything, like this is not the time to do it, Monica. Mm. Also, like, No matter whether or not Richard is, like, falling in love with you, like, you don't just, like, you're not going to just be like, okay, we're going to do this now?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, anyway, it's just a little much.
But he was the one that told her, like, that he wants to tell them, and she was like, no, and then she decided that she wanted to.
Right,
I guess so. And so, like, it was her that was holding it back.
It's just not the right time.
Totally. But that's what makes the comedy of this scene is, like, you know, they set us up too ahead of time. Like, he walks into the bathroom with Judy and he's like, hey, Judy, like, have you seen my bat or whatever? Right.
I know. They set it up
They
so
set it
well.
Up, like, so subtly, and then we don't even think about it. And then, like, he walks in and he's like, oh, I found it.
And Ross, like, grabs it.
And walks
in. So he takes, I'll take that, Dad.
He takes, like, the crystal out of, like, her hand.
Yeah.
Because crystal can be used as a weapon. Like,
Ross is doing such a good job at, like, making sure everyone's safe. And this is going to be a horrible situation, but how do we minimize the damage?
This is so good.
So, yeah, my appreciation for Ross here is just...
And then I don't know if you caught it, but, like, there's this moment. Well, I'm sure you've caught it many times, but, like, there's this moment where Judy is just like, oh, yeah, like, who are you seeing? And she turns around and, like, opens the fridge. And then Ross goes up to Monica and, like...
I know.
And then she, like, puts her hand on his face and just kind of, like, pushes him away. Like, and I just think it's so good. Again, like, some kind of silent acting, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And then Judy, when she's like, Jack!
Such a good... That's exactly what she sounded like. Oh, my God. Can you come in here? No! Yeah, no, exactly. It's such a good, like, unveiling. And again, they do such a good job of, like, it's incremental. You know, it's like one thing and then one thing and then one thing and then one thing. And it's just like, and they just slowly add things into the scene. It's so good.
That's impossible. He's got a Twinkie in this city. I'm the Twinkie. You're the Twinkie. She's not a Twinkie. Like, it's just like, again, just like they all just play off each other. That's just really good writing to me, but, you know.
Yeah, it's so... Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah, so now, like, we're back in the tattoo parlor. We can kind of just close up this scene, but, you know, Rachel got the tattoo. Phoebe didn't. She was really scared. And then, did you know they do this with needles?
I was just about to say that. This in my notes. I literally, did you know they do this with needles? No, mine was licked on by kittens. See, again, that's another situation where it's, like, a hilarious line, like, countered by another hilarious line.
That's true, yeah.
You know? Anyway.
It's good.
But,
Yeah. So, okay. So we already talked about the next scene of their kind of like, they're fighting, blah, blah, blah. And then I just want to bring up the fact that they decide they're going to fight for the foosball table, right? Chandler right. and Joey are going to fight for the foosball table. And then again, we get this like other moment where like, it's just like, you know, he's like, oh, your little men are going to get scored on more times than your sister. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this unseen woman gets thrown under the bus in order to make a line funny. Like, literally just like.
Also, I want to point out again, like the wording of that is like scored on. You know, like when men score.
Right.
Women get scored on.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like.
Gross.
Yeah. Instead of like, you know, oh man, your sister scores.
Yeah.
You know, like.
That's true. So true. Which not is said.
Like, it's like. Good for her.
Yeah.
She gets it. Yeah.
Oh my God. But yeah, and then again, we get this moment of like, how dare you say that? Like, that's someone's sister. Like, literally, it's like where they're lining up again that like, oh, how dare you insult a man's sister?
I know.
It's more of an insult to the man than it is to the sister. And then he like, he is like in appalled. And then he goes, well, which sister? Like, because it would be okay to say this about some of my sisters. But not all of my sisters.
Yeah.
It's just like.
It's all very.
It's just gross. It's just real gross. And that's like another instance of sexism. Like this whole episode has just such a theme of gross mm-hmm. sexism. Anyways. Yeah. We're in Monica and Rachel's apartment.
Mm-hmm. And Phoebe is. Oh, right. Yeah. So they're talking about their tattoos. And yeah. What I love about this. So first of all, I want to point out how, you know, I feel like. So many people who are listening to this probably have a tattoo because we're at that point in this world. And if you don't have a tattoo, you probably know someone who has a tattoo. And you know for a fact that on the same day, because it is the same day, they are wearing the same pants, you wouldn't have a raw tattoo just out there under your very tight pair of pants.
Yeah. That's not how it works.
Like, it's not how tattoos heal.
Yeah.
And...
to cover it up.
And anyway, so I just want to
it literally looks like someone drew it on her skin with like a pencil, like a pen and a marker. Like, yeah, and then Phoebe goes, it looks so good. And it's just like, does it though?
No matter what though, I'm like, I'm so proud of you, Rachel. Like, oh, totally. It's so great. Good for you.
She's totally growing up, becoming more independent. We're seeing it every day.
I know. She's like doing what she wants with her body. And that's like so cute, even if it's just with a tiny little heart in, like that no one will ever see again. It's just like, good for you, Rachel.
Yeah, I love it.
But
I love Rachel this moment when she like fights back against Phoebe.
Okay, wait. First of all, I want to point out how Phoebe, I love how she again, it's just so Phoebe, where she's able to, like, be like, oh, is that just a dot? And she's able to be like, yes, that is the Earth from a great, great distance, and that is how my mother sees me. And I just think that's, like, it's so great that she's, like, able to take what she originally wanted, which was, like, a tattoo for her mother, and she is able to circle it all the way back around through everything and make it about her mom. You know what? It almost makes sense.
You know what it makes me think of? Okay, I don't know if you ever did this in high school or, like, elementary school, but, like, when you had to, like, create an art piece for, like, a book or, like, something that you talked about in class and, like, you had to, like, have an art piece or, like, whatever. Do you remember like just creating anything random and then just like trying to explain it? Like just be like, oh yes, this line is representative of the linear aspects of this story, or like this wave. Like I just remember like we used to always have to like create some sort of like art that is representative of something we talked about in class.
Right.
And like me just like having no idea how to do that. So just like fucking doing anything and then just like trying to like retroactively make it seem artistic or like make it try to explain the art in a specific way. And I'm like, really, I just drew a bunch of lines on a piece of paper, but like, let's find a way to make this make sense. Like, that's what it feels like.
So, and then right as Rachel is being like, that's not a real tattoo, this is a real tattoo, you know, Ross comes in. And in my notes, I say that when Ross says, you got a tattoo? I wrote in my notes, Ross sounds too angry.
Yeah.
He does. He sounds way too angry. He's like, you got a tattoo?
Yeah.
It's just like,
but then she's only allowed to do it because he finds it sexy.
I know, right? It's like, what if he didn't find it sexy? What if she got a snake on her, wrapped around her leg? You know, like, it's just, it's...
Which, for the record, would be real sexy for me, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. Different strokes for different folks.
You know, but for Ross, it definitely wouldn't be, right? Yeah. And it's just...
Oh, and then I just want to say that there is this moment, and I was telling Quinn when we were watching it, that, like, Rachel gets so giddy and excited, and, like, Ross is, like, pulling her to the bedroom, and she, like, is, like, hopping her feet, and she's, like, kind of, like, prancing, and then she, like, turns back and, like, faces her friends and gives them, like, this smile of, like, pure joy. Like, she's just so happy, and she, like, goes into the room with Ross, and I just, like, I find that moment, like... I don't know what it is about it, but I just, like, feel so much internal joy when I see Rachel make that face, and I think of it all the time. And I just, like, I don't know, I just think it's just this pure, genuine joy that was, like, radiating out of her. And I just think that, like, either she was actually experiencing that joy in real life, or, like, she's just an incredible actress in that moment. I don't know.
Yeah. In the next scene, we're in now only Chandler's apartment. And it's full of moving boxes, and they're helping Joey move out.
Yeah, is it like a week later?
I don't know. It's kind of like undetermined amount of time later, but it's sort of...
It feels real fast.
It feels really fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to point out a couple of things. One is that Chandler is very sad and not helping, which I don't...
Yeah.
Maybe that's... I don't know. And then I also want to point out that bras are too expensive to be used as slingshots.
Yeah.
That is some bullshit right there.
Maybe it's an old bra.
It did not look old.
Mm. Yeah, fair. And then, yeah. Oh, I'm just so sad that they're breaking up.
Yeah, I put in my notes, is this a breakup?
They're just so cute. And then he leaves and comes back and gives them this hug, and it's just like... They're best friends.
I know. The hug where Joey comes back in, it's, like, one of my favorite hugs in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very cute. And I don't want to give anything away for future episodes, but, like, you feel by the end of this episode that things are going to be okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Who do you think is the best friend of the episode?
Well, first, do we want to talk about the scene with Monica's dad?
Oh, yeah, sure. So this scene, one that we just talked about, is the last scene in the Crave version or
Netflix whatever, version. Yeah, streaming network that you use.
But in the DVD version, there's a final scene in which Jack comes over to Monica's apartment.
And he tells her how he went over to Richard's to, like, give him a piece of his mind, but then they end up watching the game, and then Richard served him beer on tap, and he was very impressed.
Yeah.
And then he's like, And Monica's like, well, did you talk about me? And he was like, actually, no, we never got around to that.
Yeah.
And he ends up saying, like, sweetie, you're a big girl, but, you know, I just hope you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Which, like, is great and fine. And again, I think it's interesting because it's weaving that, like, complicated, like, oh, this is, like, a loving, supportive dad, and they have, like, a good relationship in some ways with, like, also normalizing him being a total scumbag, you know, like, and the way that he talks about women and that being okay in some capacity, you know, and...
Yeah, but I think it's classic. I think it's a classic portrayal of, like, of a dad, which is, like, a dad on television, which is he's really kind... And there for his wife and his children. And, like, he's, like, a dad that, like, cares. But he's actually really, really sexist and gross to, like, outside of that.
Yeah.
And I think, like, and honestly, it makes me sad. But, like, I really think that, like, a lot of men are like that.
Again, not that I want to be, like, the hashtag not all men bullshit. But I want to point out that, like... This is just the reality of the situation, that it's so pervasive. And, of course, things are changing, you know, as, you know, people talk about. But the point being is that, like, a large part of what men can do who don't want this to be how men are known as is to basically talk about this and, you know, not call out other men. It's huge. Anyway. Or,
yeah, call out other men. You said not call out other men.
Sorry, I was starting a different sentence.
Oh, okay.
And then it turned into call out other men.
Right.
But I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Moving
on.
Do call out the men. But yeah. So anyway, so I find this end scene interesting in that sense. But you can only see it if you have the DVD.
Yeah.
Anyway, who do you think is the best friend of the episode?
Talking to me.
Yeah. No.
I don't know. The way you said it, it sounded like you were like asking the listeners. Okay. So I think that there's like some contenders simply for like them not being bad friends. I think like, I think that Phoebe has moments of like being like trying to rile Rachel up and being like, come on, man, like your partner can't tell you what you can or cannot do with your body. So like, that's definitely a point to Phoebe.
Mm-hmm.
I think like Ross has good moments of like mediating, but like also is like a really shitty friend to Phoebe. So I would not put him as a good friend of the episode.
Right.
I think Chandler and Joey are just kind of shitty to each other back and forth in a few moments. I think like they're both vulnerable and then it comes off as being shitty to each other. I think Rachel is like fine. She kind of like shits on Phoebe for being scared. And then Monica has moments of like, Monica like just doesn't do anything harmful to her friends in this episode.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Monica's not doing any sort of support work, which great. That's good.
Yeah.
She is very often doing so much emotional labor and like support and cooking food for everyone. So good for you. Not, you know, dealing with your own shit and tapping out. I was originally my gut instinct was to give Ross the best friend of the episode because I think that he does excellent support work in navigating that whole party situation.
Yeah.
And he's like super on it.
But he loses points for, I think, just being shitty to Phoebe.
Like how we're making this into a point system.
I don't know.
And then,
my vote is Phoebe. I think Phoebe does like a good job of like, of supporting Rachel when she's having doubts. And I think that if it wasn't for Phoebe, Rachel wouldn't have gotten a tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Don't forget to check out the new website.
Keep
deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.